Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Project Egg Show. I'm your host, Ben Gothard, and today we have the honor of speaking with Alon Block. How are you doing today, Alon?
I'm doing really well, Ben. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to be chatting with you today because your history is amazing. I'm so excited to dive into it and to talk about your journey thus far and all the incredible things that you've done. Yeah, it's such an honor to be able to speak with you. So thank you very much for carving out the time.
Sure. And thanks for your time and, look forward to
chat. So let's jump right in. I want to know, what is your story?
Where do you want to start from?
From the very beginning.
So I grew up in Israel, and I came to the US pretty much by chance, ended up doing my MBA at Columbia, worked at McKinsey, ended up joining an early stage VC for 7 years, investing in early stage technology companies in Israel and in the New York area. And about 12 years ago, I started with what I realized was my true passion, which was building companies, you know, from scratch. I was co-CEO of Wix, which is now public on NASDAQ, and it's a web publishing platform and also an operating system for small businesses. And I'm really proud about Wix. I'm still on the board, and Wix is now a big company. It's got over 3,000 employees. It's been public for 6 years. I was also co-founder and CEO of Vroom, that buys and sells cars online. And I started K-Health, focused on using AI for transforming healthcare and down the road medicine. We started that 3 years ago together with a few of my friends, and I can talk about that down the road.
That's amazing. So I believe you said you came to the US by happenstance, or how did that actually come about where you ended up here?
Well, I was living in Israel, and in Israel, you typically serve in the military first, and then you go to university. So I did that for 3 years, and then did my undergraduate in Tel Aviv University, and I focused on biological science. I was interested in genetics and what people call biotechnology, how things operate at the biological level, biochemistry and cell chemistry and DNA, and this is the early 90s. I worked for a couple of years after that. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, and my mom actually suggested I just considered just going to see the world, go live in a big country and try it out. And I applied, and I was in various universities, and I actually didn't know anything about the process. I got waitlisted in Columbia, ended up being accepted, and moved to the US. This was in late 95.
And why was biotech such a draw for you? What was really the motivator behind why you wanted to learn more about that?
I think it was, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I had some just basic curiosity around how things work at the biological level. What is it about us that makes us people or animals or plants, and what, how does this evolve? So I was curious about evolution and around genetics and all the implications about, you know, all these different things. But it wasn't around getting a profession of being a doctor or lawyer or businessman. It was more around, okay, just the basic science behind that.
But why was that? Why was that so interesting to you? Why did you care about that basic science?
Because honestly, it felt something quite fundamental. In the same way that people are interested in how to build bridges or how to fly planes, I was curious about how, what makes humans human. What, you know, what is this magical DNA? How does it, you know, make, you know, cause us to operate, and what makes all the other creatures, and what connects, you know, what's the fabric that connects, you know, all these different creatures. So, but of course, a lot of it goes down to the cellular level of, you know, how do cells work and how do organisms get created, and then how do creatures like mammals and humans and, you know, get to be, you know, where we are. It's just magical. So, and it didn't happen in one day. So, you know, that was, I suppose, the basic understanding. And it's really more of a philosophical desire to understand the universe, or a small corner of the universe, rather than go and have a profession so I can get paid.
So then it seems like you went from that interest into the business world. And then it doesn't seem like that it's a direct path there. So why specifically business? Why did that interest you also?
I thought I would go into work in the biotechnology sector. So I felt initially I thought I might want to do a PhD and stay in academia, and then realize I don't want to do that. And I was not really knowing still what I wanted to do. I thought I could marry, get a basic understanding of business and marry that with science and do something in biotech. I didn't know much about biotech, but it intrigued me and looked alluring at you know, in the 90s, most of the biotech was in California. So I didn't think about it too much, but I actually didn't end up doing any of that and never end up working in pharmaceuticals or biotech ever. And that's okay. My career kind of changed along the way, and I ended up at every step doing things I enjoyed doing and were fulfilling at the time.
Did you ever draw from what you learned exploring that basic curiosity of that basic science of how the organisms work? Did you ever draw from that and pull that into your business ventures?
Yes, indirectly. What you learn in science is you learn a basic approach to hypothesis and theories, and how you go and prove or disprove them, and have to think logically. And, you know, science is not storytelling. Everything you do, everything you say is true. You need to prove it's true. And it hasn't been disproven as, incorrect. So just, you know, the basic, first of all, mass, statistics, logical thinking. Of course, I use it all the time. I also think that, you know, I've had a formal education, but I've learned a lot from books, from listening to people, a lot from books. Even during my childhood, I just read a lot. I read the entire encyclopedia. I memorized everything around geography and history, and many areas of science. So I think it's always a blend of a formal or informal education.
And how did you pursue the course of your informal education? Like, how did you prioritize what you were going to learn about at what stage?
I don't think it's some kind of conscious decision of, I need to do this or I need to do that. That happens more on the formal level. When I started my own ventures, my own companies, I focused on, okay, this is a big problem I need to solve, I need to understand. For example, in K, understanding the healthcare market and therefore understanding medical research and understanding medicine. In other areas, you know, in other sectors I did is, you know, they're just whole worlds I needed to understand. I didn't know anything about the sectors that I went into. But I was already used to it a bit from McKinsey. In McKinsey, where I did, I wasn't there for a long time, but in McKinsey, where I worked as a consultant, I don't know how familiar you are with McKinsey, but I did, I used to jump from sector to sector. I was a bit in the energy sector and a bit in the tech sector and software sector and the car parts sector. So I was in different sectors and needed to learn really quickly and be able to bring something to the table in a matter of weeks. Because, you know, a couple months down the road, you're talking to a CEO of a major company or presenting information that would be used for recommendations to a CEO of a major company. So I was quite used to this agile way of kind of going to an industry and kind of learning it really quickly and trying to understand. Of course, you look at the world very different as an entrepreneur versus a consultant, completely different. And your goal and approach is, you know, could be quite different, but there are also similarities.
Can you expand on that a little bit and talk about those differences and similarities, and what are the most important ones to really focus on?
Yeah, look, it's a whole world, but I think when you want to start a company in a certain area, and I can tell you what led me to do some of the things I've done. When you start a company, you're coming into an industry that exists, that has legacy players, and it has its own rules. It might have regulation. It's got a competitive landscape. It's got pricing. It's got customers. It's got the rules of the game. And you need to come and reimagine something completely different. And by the way, you don't have a brand. You don't have resources. And nobody cares about your company, right? So you need to be quite rebellious in your approach. And you need to be right. So if you're a contrarian and you're wrong, it's entirely unhelpful. And it's not going to be easy. So you need to be able to persevere and double down on your, you know, tenacity and just, you know, make it happen. When you're working at a big company, or when you're a consultant to a big company, and in McKinsey, you consult, you know, big companies, very big companies, in fact, for the most part, you're trying to help them, given in many cases their significant footprint in those markets. Maybe they're going to try and be more competitive. Maybe they want to go to adjacent markets. Maybe they want to, you know, cut costs out. Maybe they want to adapt to the market, but they already have a lot in. When you start from fresh, when you take all the chairs out of the room and you rearrange the room completely different, you're also going to ask yourself, do you even need a door, and where the door is going to be? Whereas if you've got a room with furniture and doors and windows, you're not going to start moving everything around, right? So that's a very, very different way of thinking. It could be very scary for many people because you've got nothing to fall back on and you're relying fundamentally on yourself and your core team to do that. But you're also, it's very liberating because nobody's stopping you and saying, hey, you have to use this legacy asset that we have, this resource that we already have, or you're going to piss somebody off, or there's other opinions. You can build something and be true to what you believe is right. And I think that's so what's so magical about starting companies. You know, it gets lost along the way that you have the ability to affect a lot of people. A small amount of them are your employees. A larger amount of them, hopefully, are your customers. And you can, in this day and age, there's a lot of capital that wants to back interesting stories with strong entrepreneurs. And I think that's where it's incredibly gratifying, incredibly, you know, it's why I do this, you know?
So it seems like this is really a way of doing things, like a philosophy that you've developed in your experiences. How would you say that philosophy has evolved as you went into the corporate life, into, it seems like you spent some time in the venture capital space, and then as the entrepreneur and building businesses, having seen the entire gamut from a ton of different sides, how has that evolved over time?
So I think it's evolved significantly. And look, you'll see as you grow and you know, develop, you're interested in slightly different things in different stages of your life. When I start a company, I try and think for myself, okay, how can I build a company that I will be really excited about, that's going to make a huge, huge difference to a lot of people, and my team will be really excited about. So it's an opportunity to start something from scratch. You're also, you know, pushing yourself, you know, outside of, you know, your comfort zone. I think I care more today around solving things that matter to a lot of people. And I think what matters is health, education, housing, basic infrastructure, the environment, and of course, how things get governed. Those are big areas. So with K Health, I focused on health and healthcare and how we can completely change the way people access health information and can act on that. And I can talk a bit about that if you'd like, but that's
please.
But that's kind of why we started K. But you need to bear in mind that when I started K, I have already built significant businesses, raised large amounts of capital previously, and had an experience of what that means to build companies. And so, because we went after a really ambitious goal, and we're 3 years in, but it looks like we're going in the right direction, but there's a lot of things we'll need to do. So, I can talk about that, but that might be, a good example. So first of all, so when I start a company and I learn a sector, I spend several months thinking about it. That means I'll speak to people in the industry. And here, my general view about healthcare, we called the company initially 2O for second opinion. The goal for us was to try and provide people, humans, consumers, with direct information around their health that's relevant and trustworthy without necessarily asking the doctor for that information, and to give people control around their health information in a way that hasn't been done to date. If you live life long enough, you see for you or for your loved ones, in retrospect, mistakes that doctors made or things that doctors could have done better. And I've always asked myself, gee, why don't I have access to this information? And how can I challenge my physician? Because I challenge the people who manage my money. I can make really smart decisions about travel or the restaurant I go to eat, but I can't do that when it comes to health. There is some kind of acquiescence to really bad information that's irrelevant. If you go online, many cases you need to guess. All these systems are guessing, what you might have. That's entirely unhelpful. Throwing darts at the wall and having acquiescence to really, really bad quality of information and then showing you what you might have is entirely unhelpful. So the question that we said was, gee, if we got hold of a big enough and rich enough data set, would we able to train a machine to do differential diagnosis and provide that information to people? And that's what doctors do for a living, certainly at the primary care, whether in a clinic or a hospital, right? A doctor, when people go to the doctor and they complain about, they've got abdominal pain or chest pain or back pain or a headache, the doctor is having a conversation with them where they're trying to prove out what they have and also rule out certain diseases, certain conditions, right? So if somebody's complaining about a headache, a doctor in a matter of minutes will need to try and figure out if your headache is a tension headache or migraine or sinusitis or something that's acute but not significant, or they need to rule out bacterial meningitis or brain aneurysm, right?
Something more severe.
Severe and in certain cases immediate, need to be treated immediately. And a physician, of course, has a broad, very broad amount of education, right? Is a major profession. Doctors on average between their education and their practical experience, it's about a 10-year experience, to get started. There's a reason why we can't do two courses and be our family doctor and start writing prescriptions and diagnosing people, right? There is a body of knowledge that we need to have. And so that fantastic capability and encyclopedic knowledge and judgment that a physician has is why people trust doctors, right? They go to a doctor, they're in pain, something's unusual going on. And, you know, they want to know, is it something with their heart? Is it cancer? You know, and a smart physician does what's called, you know, rolls out these things. And if they need to need to send people to do an x-ray or labs for infections or other things, you know, they'll do it. But a great physician doesn't send everybody to the ER, right? Or to the x-ray. That great physician also doesn't miss out on clues of underlying rare or chronic conditions that might be lurking there, right? And so that's quite a tall order. I have a lot of respect to physicians because many times they're using partial information. So what a physician will ask you a question, right? If somebody comes in and complains about a headache, how long has it been? What triggers it? Where exactly is the headache? Has it gotten better or worse? Is it accompanied by something else like vomiting or diarrhea or fever? Is there been weight change? Are you taking drugs that might impact, you know, something? Did you start taking something? Did you stop taking something? It might be a cocktail of drugs. Do you smoke? Do you have a certain background disease? Do you have certain allergies or diabetes or stuff like that? High blood pressure, right? There's all these different things. Mm-hmm. And the magical capability of a physician is to put all that together and consider, okay, that headache might be, might be a migraine or sinusitis, you know, and then, you know, does it need a prescription? Do you need to prove that it is through a lab? Do you need to do further checks? Do you need to refer that person, or do the person need to go to the ER, right? All of the above. And of course, you know, fantastic physicians are well-trained with this, have great knowledge, and they can kind of route you, right? They can decide, okay, just, you know, don't worry about it, rest at home, watch some Netflix, kind of watch for waiting all the way to the ER and anything in between. I know what you have, and you need a prescription or an over-the-counter medication, or I need to do, you know, further work. We ended up licensing a data set from a very large HMO in Israel that has 2.25 million people. And we got data for 20 years. This HMO is called Maccabi, and they're what's called in business vertically integrated HMO. So they're both an insurer and they have their own doctors, their own captive labs, captive drugstore, you know, in their own hospitals, and they have their own EMR, their own electronic medical record. It's a single system. And they bet on us early on, and we were able to license the data set, anonymize it, of course. They're really, really incredibly high level. And then build a series of models on it by teaching a machine the language of medicine, right? Now, just imagine a doctor's note might say, you know, 30-year-old female complaining about cramping for days accompanied by various other symptoms, let's say diarrhea. Sorry, but this is kind of the area that, you know, the domain that I'm in.
Of course.
Doesn't have a fever. These are background diseases. And this is our potential, you know, diagnosis, like gallbladder or appendicitis or, you know, just stomach cramps. Or menstrual pains or whatever, you know, might be. Our machine needs to understand all these specific things. You know, it needs to understand what is, you know, severe pain, what is, you know, belt-like headache, what is a pulsating headache, and how all these things tie together. Our machine needs to understand if somebody does not have their thyroid, how it impacts the everything else in their body. If you know a little bit about the human body, you know the thyroid is very important and governs a lot of things, you know, in the body. People have diabetes, it impacts many things, you know, in their propensity to get all these things. So we built a machine that creates a logical connection, a semantic connection, a statistical connection between gender and age and medical history and symptoms. And I'll stop here, but if you think about that, you know, that's quite significant. This machine ran through tens of millions of medical charts and was able to learn from the data with a bit of guidance from us and build a series of models that we could use to predict, put it in front of users, and the user has and then we wrapped it in an app and put it on the app store, and the user can come in and say, my head hurts, and our machine can have an intelligent conversation with you that's incredibly detailed and takes into account your gender and age and medical history and symptoms, and can tell you, we don't diagnose, of course, but we can tell you statistically, based on people like you, this is what you might have, this is what else it could be, and these are all the different ways to treat it, based on our ability to mathematically calculate who are the relevant health experiences, who are these relevant people that, you know, you can learn from. Nobody's built anything like that. People have built rules-based systems. Some of them work better, some of them work worse. But again, the human body is really, really complicated. And it's not only about a statistical understanding of what you may or may not have, but also the logical, you know, connection between all these different things. And so our machine learned medicine not by reading the books for years and then building this, you know, great practical understanding of medicine and having a lot of experience and learning this apprenticeship from more senior doctors of machine learned medicine by understanding these, you know, ingesting these, you know, tens and hundreds of millions and billions of data points and connecting them all in a way that is, you know, truly, you know, artificial intelligence. With the goal of putting this in front of users, and you can download K-Health, the app. Our app is actually super popular. It's typically number one medical app. You know, we have about 2 million users. We're growing really quickly. But we have this, the app has the ability to have a conversation with you about, you know, many acute conditions at a cost of zero. And I think that's tremendously helpful. But we also wanted to make this actionable. And K also has doctors that you can have a text-based conversation with doctors based on that information that the machine collected with you, and we assemble it and put it in front of doctors. And doctors, of course, can diagnose and treat, except they do it remotely. And we can do it at a fraction of the cost. So now we're giving people access to health information that's relevant. We allow them to decide for themselves what they want to do and decide for themselves. So they want to have a conversation in a matter of minutes with a doctor. And just think about it. It's midnight and you're feeling really, really bad, or you're busy at work, or any other reason. You now have an ability to have a good understanding of, you know, your headache. And if you want to get medical advice or get a prescription or a referral, you can press a button and have a text-based conversation with a doctor at a cost that's less than your copay, all through an app. I think that's quite, you know, quite powerful.
That's revolutionary. So you're basically making predictions based on hundreds of millions of previous data points that you licensed from the entity in Israel, and based on that, it's making predictive models that can then be applied to when a user puts in their information and say, okay, most likely you have this, that, or the other thing. And then at some level, they can then take that base knowledge from the app that the AI is giving them some sort of answer, and they can then within minutes talk to a real physician to then have a more actionable step and to be able to get the, like the care or the prescription or the recommendation that they need from both an AI piece and a physician piece. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes. And then now think about the implications for society at large in terms of accessing quality health information, acting on it. We take down the cost of primary care by 90%. Wow. With board certified physicians. And if you know a bit about healthcare in America, you know it's incredibly expensive and many people can't afford it. It's the number one of reasons for bankruptcy. And typically the people that earn less in America have worse insurance plans. But also just think of whole continents in Africa and Asia and Latin America, where most people don't have decent access to healthcare. They might need to wait for weeks or even months to see a doctor. They might get a prescription directly from a pharmacist. There's just not a lot of doctors. Doctors need to be highly educated. They need to be smart. They need to study for many years. It's expensive. And, you know, the world needs probably 20, 30, 40 million physicians that we're lacking. You can't magically stop everything and get everybody into that. So we need to use different ways. By the way, the population's aging. And if the one thing that's sure, people need more healthcare when they're older compared to when they're younger. And there's more people with chronic conditions for various reasons, but many of them are lifestyle oriented. And again, people are living longer and have more health conditions. So whether it's high blood pressure or diabetes or heart related conditions. So we need to build different systems that are geared to for the 21st century, that start from where you are, which you're at home or at work or at school, and you're not feeling well, or you have a question, or by the way, you just need a refill, or you've got a little question and you want advice. So how to build that kind of trusted, you know, system, I think is really important. But I think now think a step further, right? What can you do from a system that can learn from the data and can work for you, right? And can take into account the fact that you are a purple person, that you are sensitive to purple drugs or sensitive to orange drugs, and how to learn about that. My ability to essentially have this intelligent capability to put it at the in the cloud for a fraction of a dollar and have an intelligent conversation that you might reach out and say, okay, something's bothering me, I've got this rash, or the system reaches out to you and said, hey, your lab results came in and, you know, I'm comparing you to people like you and your cholesterol is a bit high. Do you want to see two or three strategies about what people did and first of all, where that could lead you and, you know, how to avoid certain things like heart or diabetes related stuff. This is where medicine hasn't progressed enough and really tough for medicine to tailor its offering. You know, everybody talks about personalized health, but it's really tough to do. Again, you've got really big public system. These are very expensive. It's very time consuming and they built for a different era. So now we're able to do something that's completely different. I think it's delightful. I think it saves a ton of time. I think it gives people access. I think it does at low cost, but most importantly, down the road will lead to better health outcomes because you're giving people the ability to get that information also at, you know, 2 a.m. and also remote and also, you know, learn from all these different things. So it's a never ending exercise. And, you know, apropos tying it all in together, we're already looking at how to add in genetics and down the road, I'm sure we'll add biome and wearables and build this very, very rich context about us and about our family members and have it all controlled by us. So, you know, if you think about all that together, it's significant.
So one question that I have is, we definitely have a shortage of physicians.
Yeah.
And that would inherently, since the demand is extremely high, the supply is very low, that makes each physician significantly valuable, which means it's expensive to have a ton of physicians and they need to get paid too. They need to make a living
yeah.
and are probably used to making a significant living. So if the technology is cutting the cost of the healthcare down and people aren't having to pay as much, how then do you convert the physicians into participating with the app and providing this service or like engaging with the app to serve people through it, but still maintain their level of income or at least something comparable and make it engage them, get them to be engaged with it at the same time? Has that been an issue at all?
No. Look, I think at the healthcare system, certainly certain healthcare systems are not going to allow that I reduce the cost by 90% while providing better quality. I think it's important to focus on what matters, and that's people need quality access to our access to quality information that's actionable and relevant, and their ability to orchestrate a health system that works for them and make it much, much a different cost structure for people to do it. Look, the reality is doctors love K because they use K. Even if a doctor doesn't understand machine learning, they look at it and say, wow, I tried to trick it with some kind of complex heart situation and the machine did a really good job. And so they look at it and say, okay, it's much, much better than, you know, Dr. Google and just getting, you know, random information. You know, that's one thing. A lot of doctors work in our system. we have a portal for doctors that they can interact with people. And we pay for a lot of doctors to use our system. We're just building a different model. Bear in mind, a lot of what we're removing is wasteful care, is inefficient care. And I don't know how much you know about it and your audience, but nearly one-fifth of the U.S. economy is now in healthcare. Wow. It's healthcare expenditures. And it's more than double most other Western countries, and people live less long than in other countries. It's difficult to do a country-to-country comparison, but we don't get what we pay for. We're just paying a lot more and not getting a lot in return. Certainly outside of certain areas of excellence, primary care here is not better than, you know, in many other, you know, Western countries. So we need to change this. And you, it's really, really important when you start a company to focus on the problem that matters and solve that. Look, I'll also mention one other thing. Many physicians have used KID, and then they'll walk up to their electronic medical record and say, hey, I saw 35 people today. I could have seen four. KID should have seen the rest. And those four people that, you know, I've seen, I could spend much more time with them. So I actually think you can provide better healthcare. Of course, there is a cascade of, okay, how do you price this? How do you create a business model? But the last people I'm worried about, their jobs as doctors, because they're in such a need. And just imagine with remote care, why not also treat people in other countries where there's a shortage of people? Have doctors focus on diagnosis and treatment. If you go to a doctor's clinic, you'll see so much of their time is spent on billing and administration, on really clunky and messy software, on stuff that is not value added to them or to their users. So we need to build a different system, and you know, this system, nobody can afford it anymore in any case. So it doesn't matter. We have a system that none of us can afford.
So is like the ultimate goal to then get, and by the way, I like to ask these questions because I'm curious. I'm a huge advocate of what you do. I mean, I believe in it and I love it. I think the world seriously needs it. But I'm just curious, like, is the end goal like a complete 100% success? Would that be where every human on earth uses K to get for all of their healthcare needs, and then all of the physicians on the other side are using the portal to then serve the people through K? Is that kind of the like,
just to, wave just a wand? There's 7.5 billion people on the planet. If we could all anonymously share information and learn from it, just imagine the amount of rare conditions that we can learn about. Just imagine our ability to learn the march of influenza or other viral or bacterial diseases and get smarter about it. And just the amount of empowerment you're doing. Just also think about health broadly. Health is not just a doctor's visit and a prescription and a test or a surgery. Healthcare is also what you eat and how you feel. And it's also a lot of complicated nuanced stuff that medicine might not have a full answer because they're messy, because we don't have a metric that we can measure, that a marker that we can measure that's very specific that we can quantify and say, okay, this person is suffering from, you know, from this or from that. So even conditions like back pain and migraine that are large and a lot of people have them, medicine doctors will be the first to admit that they do a mediocre job on that. They don't do a great job in solving that. So our ability to go more broadly and have a conversation with people, collect information, be smarter, I think it'll lead to a lot of research breakthroughs, a lot of drugs that can be developed, but also a lot of ability to manage people in a very different way or avoid stuff altogether. You know, as much as we can sequence a genome, we still don't understand most of what our genes do. These are big, big endeavors, and biome is even in a much earlier stage, right? But we know these things matter. We also know there's a whole world of epigenetics of how genes get expressed. So there's all these different groups here that, you know, need to come together, but you need to add context. You don't look at your Fitbit or Apple Watch and say, Apple Watch, and you know, my head's hurting, what do I do, right? You need to connect wearables to symptoms to medical history. You know, and that's what we're trying to do, except it doesn't take a year. These things will take, you know, decades. And I think it's important to understand it's a never-ending puzzle. And each of us is, you know, is a long tail of one. We have a very, very specific context, but we can learn from others. And our basic human fabric of gender and age and our genes and medical history, there's so much learning that we don't have a healthcare system that does that. So yeah, very, very different approach to how healthcare should work and also how medicine should work.
So when you think about like legacy and what you want to leave behind on this planet, is K the final step for you?
I don't know. I'm just getting started here. You know, we'll see. I don't spend any time thinking about it. I think it's a really important thing. I think, by the way, we'll need many partners. We should work with a lot of academic research institutions. We should, you know, work with pharmaceutical companies that are developing drugs for, you know, unknown diseases or rare diseases. We should partner with insurers to encourage certain policies like we have right now. We have a big partnership with Anthem Blue Cross that has 41 million members, you know, in the US. But, you know, I don't know. This is not something that I'm thinking about. I'd like to be able to do K for 20 years and I'm 49. So we'll see what happens next then.
That's amazing. Well, Alona, I want to be very respectful of your time. Clearly you're a very, very busy man. You know, so I want to express my appreciation for the time that you've shared with me today. And I'm very grateful. I do have one more question for you. Then we'll sure. Go ahead and wrap it up.
Sure.
But what question should I be asking you that I just wouldn't think to ask?
Probably a lot of questions, but all good. You asked a lot of great questions. I think startups and the ability to start a company from scratch is really tough. It's not for everybody. It can look chaotic, or it can look tremendously exciting and energizing. It is fits certain people and not others. It's not a matter of intelligence or you know, what you're born with. It's a matter of, you know, what you like doing. A lot of what I try and do is just manage my time. Time is such an important asset, and priorities. And so I've got three kids, you know, now how do I manage through all of that? I've got a wife. I even have some friends, which I rarely see. And, you know, I travel a lot as well. And so how do you go and build something that's, you know, significant and you're passionate about and takes a lot of your time and mental energy, and how do you have enough, you know, at home is kind of a big deal. And you'll see when you have your family and kids of your own, you know, how that goes, but you're juggling a lot of things. The art of juggling both the priorities of a company and your own personal priorities are not easy. And you can't be half pregnant, so you have to commit to the company, but you're already committed to your family. So that is something I think about a lot, and how to manage my time better and how to have people that are hire people that are incredibly capable and can do a better job than me and can run with things and own certain things. And I don't need to worry about, you know, all of that. That's what I would say is kind of over time, what, you know, also kind of occupies me as a person.
That's fascinating. And, you know, again, I just want to say thank you very much for the time that you've shared. And, you know, I'm also very grateful for what you do, because, you know, that affects everybody on the planet. I mean, healthcare is something that we all have in common. So thank you very, very much for everything that you do.
Ben, and thank you for having me, and hopefully people will try it, Kay, and tell me what they think, and hopefully it'll be helpful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you again, and to everybody's watching and listening. I will see y'all on the next episode. Take care now.